So out here in the Aleutians, we're still living in the shadow of the war in a lot of ways, but the campaign is pretty much forgotten outside our region. I just wanted to ask, how did you come to know about it?
Sure. Well, I was living in Alaska for 3 years when I was a teenager. My parents moved around quite a bit, and we ended up staying in Anchorage for 3 years. And, you know, I came from, before that, Lower 48, Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I arrived, you know, a kind of precocious teenager thinking, look, I know quite a bit about at least American involvement in World War II. And then, you know, I went to high school in Anchorage, junior high in Anchorage, and met a friend who was an Aleut and started hearing a little bit about the story. And I thought, well, how could it be that, you know, this battle fought on American soil is such a well-kept secret? Like, why don't people outside of Alaska know about this? And so that sort of planted the seed in my mind, and a bit of a, you know, it kind of stuck in my craw a bit, too, about, you know, how this battle never gets talked about outside of the state. So, you know, I always knew I wanted to be a writer, and some years later, in my late teens, early 20s, I thought, well, this bears more looking into. And so I did some research, and I read every available thing I could at the time about the battle, about what happened to U.S. and Japanese forces, and what happened to the Aleut people who were evacuated in turn. So I thought, my God, why hasn't anybody really dramatized this? Because those histories are out there for people to reach for, but they're gathering dust on the shelves in the libraries because it's not in the popular culture to think to look for it. So I sort of knew then, look, this would make a great backdrop for a novel, and finally got around to it, writing a draft. This is crazy, but it was like 12 years ago I wrote the first draft, and
wow.
You know, that meant that, look, I, as a nonfiction writer, it's important for me to also get immersed in the landscape. That meant I had to leave Vancouver and go back up to Alaska and go out to the Aleutians, walk the land and talk to the people and get those fine details you can't get from reading a book.
Sure. And can I just ask, which towns did you visit in the Aleutians?
I went out as far as I could at the time. That was Atka, the community at Atka, the last island that had a community there. You weren't able to go to Attu at the time, which I would like to have done, but that wasn't possible. And as far as I know, Attu is still uninhabited at this time. But, you know, that being said, I also wanted to really spend time in a community and find out, you know, from the people who live there, you know, how they live with the land, you know, how they interact with their landscape, and spend time with them.
You know, just to get our listeners up to speed, The Wind Is Not a River opens as John Easley, a Canadian war correspondent, washes up on the island of Attu. The American bomber that he's been traveling in has been shot down, and he has a young soldier as his only companion, and they have to try to survive off the land. There are some really vivid descriptions of the Aleutian landscape, like willowas, thick grasses, and the endless fog, which we are currently buried in right now. I just wanted to ask, you know, how did you go about kind of incorporating those landscape descriptions into the structure of this novel, which already has two intertwining plots? How did you go about doing that?
Well, for me, because I write both fiction and nonfiction, I take a very hands-on approach to my nonfiction, and I like to get immersed in the place and the culture of what I'm writing about. So I took that sensibility with me to this story. And, you know, one of my favorite writers is National Book Award winner Peter Matheson, who writes both fiction and nonfiction, said, you know, I don't want my characters to step off the page. I want them to step out of the landscape. And when I heard that, I thought that made perfect sense to me, number one, as a writer, but number two, about this story. Because, you know, many people, their only sort of brush with this story is going to be through this novel. And so I wanted to make sure I got the details right, and I wanted them to also learn about the landscape, because it all comes from the landscape. It all comes from the environment in which those people live, in which those islands are situated. The story revolves around that. So I wanted the environment, the landscape, to become a character in its own right in the story.
You mentioned a bit your travels out to Atka and Dutch Harbor. And in an interview with a Canadian publication, you said that, you know, you found the people in Atka to be extremely friendly, but a little bit put off by the concept of this story being novelized, you know, coming out in a book. And you said that you wanted to be really careful not to try and tell their story. I just wanted to ask kind of what you meant by that and how you hope the book is received in some of these villages that were affected by the war.
Sure. I don't think I said that they were the people in Atka were put off. I think that said they were circumspect, in the sense that, you know, you can imagine a very small community at the end of the inhabited Aleutian chain. They don't get a lot of visitors out there. And so, somebody shows up from out of nowhere, an outsider with, some grand ideas about what he wants to write or do, you can imagine the eyes rolling as soon as they hear about that in the community, because they've heard that, probably many times before. And, that community, as is true for so many Native communities throughout Alaska, British Columbia, and the Yukon, have had outsiders arrive with grand ideas about how, things could be different or done, or what should be told. So, they'd heard that before. That being said, they were very generous with me after we spent a little time together, and they indulged my interest in the landscape. So that's what I meant by that.
A lot of what this novel will do, I would assume, for readers in the lower 48 and, all over the world, is inform them about a war they knew nothing about on American soil. How do you hope it kind of enters into the local canon? What do you hope that Aleutian residents will get out of this?
Well, I take it very seriously that I don't just get the broad brush details right, but also the small details. And, any mistakes in the book are my own at this point. But I took it to heart to try to make sure that I represented the place and the people as accurately as I could, as I saw them. And I hope that in the end that they see their place and a part of their story reflected back to them in a very careful and considerate way.
One of the subjects that you really tackle in this novel is how secretive the armed forces were about the war on Alaska's territory while it was going on. At one point in the novel, an army priest says, "Let's trust our president about what people should and shouldn't know." Why was communicating that element of the war, kind of the secrecy and the ignorance of those outside, so important to you?
Well, in the end, it holds the seeds for why the novel was written in the first place, and that is, why don't we know about this story? And the answers to that question are varied, but one of the main ones is that as soon as the Aleutian engagement in the Alaska War got ramped up, the U.S. powers that be made a decision that, look, we can't contain the fact, the information that this is happening. Of course, that's out there. But what they could do, and what they did do, is round up all the journalists and send them home and say, don't come back. We are going to be sending out press bulletins from Washington, D.C. about this event, and that's all the American people need to know. Almost any other battle you can name throughout World War II had the benefit of civilian media involvement, who would, of course, redact their stories to leave out those details that could compromise anything, but they had civilian media involvement. That wasn't the case in the Aleutians. So they rounded up the journalists, sent them home, and in reality, several of them tried to sneak back in, because back in Washington, D.C., congressmen are pounding on the table saying, we want more information out of Alaska, our own territory, than is being provided to us by Tokyo Rose. You can imagine people in Seattle, Vancouver, British Columbia, Portland, Oregon, would be very interested to know about a Japanese incursion in Alaska and the possibility that they could be moving down the chain. That would be front page news above the fold if the civilian press were allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, well, I did want to jump in and ask a bit about the Aleut internment. As much as the war, this chapter of the war is kind of an unknown subject for people who, have no direct experience with it or have never been to this part of the country, the internment is certainly overlooked in history. And
yes.
you kind of found an interesting way to address that topic in the book. Would you like to talk a bit about how you wove that part of the war?
Yes, it was important for me to make sure that this part of the story gets its time on stage. But it's also important for me not to, try to tell the story of the Aleut people, Anangan people. That's been done and continues to be done. One of the great sources for stories about internment of the Aleut people is through Dean Kohlhoff's book, When the Wind Was a River. And an academic, Dean focused on getting firsthand accounts and interviews with those folks who were taken by the Japanese from Attu, and then the other Aleut people who were interned in southeast Alaska. So they've been telling their own stories, and I think it's important to recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to do was to have them involved in the story in a very meaningful way that helped, solve the through lines of my two characters, and then to become a part of the action as they were.
And, I just want to point out that your background is in journalism. You've done nonfiction books in the past about Arctic exploration, vanishing wildlife species. I just want to ask, are you going to be writing about Alaska again, whether in fiction or in nonfiction?
To write about Alaska again, I would certainly be interested in doing that. I don't currently have an idea of what that would be, but as you've mentioned, I do have an interest in the North, and the book prior to this took place in the high Arctic, and so I spent time up on Banks Island, which some of your listeners will be familiar with. It's the westernmost island of the Arctic archipelago up north of Alaska. So I'm fascinated with that part of the world and frightened by it, I have to say. It's part of my interest. But my next project will be a novel, and I don't think it's going to be based in Alaska.
Well, sure, but it is a large state, and there's plenty of ground to cover if you ever feel so moved
and
again.
There's so many stories. There are many stories that come from there. And, you know, I carried the idea of that story with me for a very long time, and fondly remember my time living in Alaska.
Great. Well, that is all the time we have for this afternoon. I want to thank you so much for joining us. That was Brian Payton, the author of the new novel, The Wind Is Not a River, about the Aleutian Campaign. Thank you for being with us, Brian.
Thank you, Lauren.